right now. This is 2FM's Game On.
And you're very welcome to Game On here on 2FM. It's Hugh Cal with you until 7 o'clock tonight. Coming up on the show, Alan Cawley on the weekend's Premier League fixtures and all things LOI, including the race for Europe and the battle to avoid relegation. Ellen Keane catches up with Antrim hurling boss Davy Fitzgerald, and Jane Mangan is here with Friday Night Racing Down Royal this weekend to kick off the National Hunt season. It's about time. And of course, the Breeders' Cup as well. 51552 for your text. And Alan Cawley is with me in the studio. How are you doing, sir?
Hugh. It's good to see you, my friend. How are you?
Against all the odds, Alan. HMV is opening a new shop in Dublin. The long throw is back in football. Martin O'Neill is at Celtic, and we're back on Game On. Well, the world is writing itself before our very eyes. Either that or we're all doomed completely.
No, I think finally, Hugh, the world is correcting itself.
Yeah,
as they say.
It's taken a while, Alan, you know, but it's okay. We've been patient.
We have.
Here we are.
But
it's
all
our
is
big
good.
Chance.
It's good to see you.
Great to see you. I presume you're booked in tomorrow night to Murty Brown's for Anthony Daly's live Q&A for Ireland against the All Blacks in Chicago. He's very excited about this. I presume you're going down.
He is a stellar panel in store as well, yeah.
Loves the oval shape ball.
Absolutely adores the rugby, yeah.
Yeah. Now, I am looking forward to this. I think New Zealand will win handy, if I'm being really honest.
Yeah, all the chat I was listening to during the week seems to be that kind of prediction, Hugh.
Yeah.
You're of the same view?
Yeah, I do. I just think, you know, the All Blacks have gotten stronger. They had a pretty decent rugby championship in Ireland, first game in a long time. Look, I'm always wrong about these things, as you well know. Whatever I say, do the opposite, and you can't come off too bad. But looking forward to it. Just before we get into the League of Ireland, and it's a massive weekend, obviously. Champions decided, but loads of other things to solve. Jeff Hendrick, I was reading a story, Roy Keane talking about Jeff Hendrick when he was managing the Republic of Ireland team.
I watched it last
night. Did you watch it?
Well, I haven't missed one yet, but the overlap, man, one of my favourites.
And he's talking about midfielders. And Jeff Hendrick, like, if you said to me, like, Jeff Hendrick, solid midfielder,
yeah,
like, not a goal threat, really. Like, he scored one or two important goals for Ireland, but he wasn't really a goal threat. But Roy Keane had a conversation with him talking about making runs,
yeah,
right? And he said, I made four or five runs there and nobody picked me out. And he just gave up. And Roy Keane's going, what is wrong with these lads? And I can understand it. And he used the example of Steven Gerrard, Frank Lampard, all these guys who scored regularly, and they ran 25 times they might get one pass.
Well, the context was around the fact that Scholes was obviously the guest on it.
Yeah.
And Scholes was making the point how a young lad from Salford, because Scholes is heavily involved in the club there, and a young fella came to him during the week, a midfielder like that, young player starting off in his career, and said, could you please help me? I want to score more goals.
Yeah.
And he says, well, I can't make you score goals, but I can give you a few tips or a guide. And that's where Keane obviously came and told the story then about Jeff, and the point being, as you say, Hugh, I made four or five runs but I didn't get it. And Keane was kind of looking at
like
him
throwing your hands.
Lampard made 20 runs, but it's the time you don't make the run is when you will get it.
Exactly.
So you have to keep getting in there, you have to keep making the runs. And that's the one thing Scholes pointed to, was the fact that what he loved about the young kid was the fact that he's getting himself in there. He said, I'd have major concerns if you weren't getting in there. The fact that you're getting in there, the chances will eventually come. Just yeah, keep making that run,
keep doing what you're doing.
And Keane, and this is a thing, I only had this chat earlier on, Hugh, as well, and you're talking about the world correcting itself. There's so much focusing now on analysis, over analysis, coaching badges, all this kind of stuff. Keane was making the point a few weeks ago with Ian Wright how, say, the likes of him or the likes of Scholes or lads, obviously that's their panel, if you like, but the likes of those lads are never invited to a club. Into say, he was making the point, Gyökeres struggling at Arsenal maybe to hit the ground running,
yeah,
or if there was anyone's before him, would they not invite Ian Wright in for a week? Talk to the strikers, talk to the forwards, and discuss maybe, you know, like lived experiences. 100%,
been there, done that. And he's seen every single type of situation. And Ian Wright was scoring goals when Arsenal could not score goals. George Graham, boring.
Yeah.
And the man was knocking in goals.
And this is the point. and it almost seems to be like, no, unless you have the badges, you can't come in. Yet these boys were playing elite level football for 10, 15 years, winning everything. But no.
What about our goal scorer, Evan Ferguson? He's done his ankle again. He's out for the next two qualifiers. And look, it's a worrying trend. And again, just to go back to Roy Keane's point about the work rate you need to put in, because Roma and the fans have started to follow what the manager has said as well about his work rate at training and his lack of effort. And I'm really disappointed by this. I would have thought, here is a 21-year-old guy, world at his feet, over in the football capital of the world, right, for lots of reasons, and an unbelievable chance, Alan. The last thing that should be missing from him is work rate and
yeah,
application.
Some of the comments now, it was hard to follow the stuff during the week, but Gasperini was obviously being a little bit critical, to be fair, just along those lines, Hugh, as you say. The worry I have, though, again, it goes back to choices. And I said at the start of the season, I felt Evan's best move would have been to a championship club where you're nearly guaranteed a game every week. Mm. There's no guarantees in football, but somewhere where you could nearly kind of pick and choose that, yes, a Preston or a Norwich or somewhere where I feel as though I'm definitely going to play, score 10, 15, 20 goals, get yourself back up full of confidence. You don't want to be going to a place where you're in and out, the manager is unsure, and this is the way it's playing out here, and that's my biggest concern. Whatever about the couple of niggly injuries that he picks up, which he's obviously been unlucky with Evan, and the manager was making the point that he can't do a full session or he hasn't done a full one or was only last week.
He had one decent training session.
Yeah, like that. But the fact that he's in and out, you've Dovga is the other lad that plays, Sule and Dybala are playing as a centre forward. So because he's gone through such a period where he hasn't played regular football, he needed to go somewhere, Hugh, where he has to play, and it's not happening, and I'd worry for him now at this stage. I really would.
Another injury as well, and look, you know, he's been unlucky, and we're hoping it's nothing more than that,
but it goes back
there's a lot of incentive. If I'm sitting in his shoes there, and I am the furthest from his shoes you could ever get, but like, he has to use this as motivation. He has to use those comments as a kick in the hole and say, get out there, start knuckle down and do what's been asked of you.
And hopefully he will, Hugh, because everybody spoke of the positives around Gasperini being his manager, that he'd be very good for him and that he'd learn so
guide
much.
Him.
Yeah, because he's good with young players, as we've seen with Atalanta as well. Mm-hmm. But the situation he finds himself in now, if the manager is having doubts, the fans, as you said, are beginning to have a few doubts as well.
Yeah.
Now, by all accounts from the stuff I was reading during the week, they're not the type that will turn on their young players, that they'll give them the chance and give them the opportunity. But it's the lack of goals, Hugh, and that's the biggest problem for a centre forward. But I said this at the start of the year, everybody was speaking about, oh, Roma, great move. I had concerns then, purely for the fact that you're not guaranteed a place.
No, you're not. And now he's in trouble.
And he has to play.
Now he's in trouble.
He had to go somewhere where he's going to play.
One final one before we move on to the League of Ireland, and we come back to the Premier League then after that. How many roly-polies do you think Robbie Keane would do if he got the Celtic job?
Will he get
seven,
it?
That's the seven roly polies.
Will
in
he
row?
Get it?
Will he get dizzy?
There's a few linked with it.
He won't get the Celtic fans don't want him.
Well, no.
Not only because he's probably unproven to a certain degree, but I think the political, you know, the fact that he was in Israel, I think would rub a lot of Celtic fans up the wrong way. And I think, I don't think he'd be a popular choice. I don't think Dermot Desmond would appoint him. Do you?
Well, he's been, like, in fairness, he's carving out a good career.
No, he's doing well
with the two clubs that he's been with and winning league titles and doing well in Europe. But yeah, that may come against him, Hugh. I'm not so sure. There's talk of Ange going back. Don't know, would that be a good move off the back of what he has done in the Premier League?
You're his biggest fan.
Don't get me started. And now there's talk maybe Martin O'Neill might stay there.
Yeah. Oh Christ.
But
really?
Not.
No, I don't think he wants to. I don't think he wants to.
I wouldn't like to see that either. But I think, again, that's a reflection of where Scottish football is at the moment, to be honest with you. It's been dreadful.
Yeah, it has been.
Dreadful.
Celtic Rangers in the Cup semi on Sunday. It'll be interesting to see how that one goes down. Right, OK, let's talk League of Ireland. You're going to draw it tomorrow. It's a massive day. We know Shamrock Rovers wrapped up the league, as we expected them to do, against Galway this week, and five titles in 6 years. Just a quick word on them. I mean, look, they're doing what they do. Apart from Shelburne last season, it has been a one-way show in the League of Ireland. Not necessarily great for the league, but they can't be complaining about it.
No, and it's not their fault that that's the case either, Hugh. They can only beat what's there in front of them. I suppose my little bit of a gripe towards that is the fact that when Dundalk and Cork in recent years were winning league titles between them, they were going toe-to-toe and there was a proper rival. Like what we see in all sports, you need a rival. And I just feel Shamrock Rovers haven't had that. And as I said, that's not their fault, but I think that's to the detriment of the league and the punters and us tuning in who wants to see that, because you want to see good teams battling it out, pushing each other to the limit. And I think they're winning these leagues at a canter.
It was over 5-6 weeks ago.
Yeah, and like,
you know, I hate that.
And the one year that we did see a drop off from them, Shelburne obviously got over the line last year, but Shamrock Rovers still had a chance on the last day of the season, could have won it, despite the fact that they gave them all a head start. So it's not their fault. Five league titles in 6 years. Stephen Bradley will be remembered as a great, great manager. I think the one thing he has to add to that, and to have a great opportunity to do it now, is doubles and trebles and the like. If you're so dominant, I think they should be winning more.
Cement your legacy.
Yeah, and win doubles, win cups along with the leagues. You know, that's what you see with all the great teams, and even the great Rovers teams of the past used to do that. So I think he has a great opportunity to do that. They'd be disappointed with the European stuff in terms of the start that they've had to the Conference League, because I think they're at a point now, Hugh, where winning the league is probably not enough in terms of a really, really successful season, because we're judging them off such a high bar, and rightly so, because you look at the league title again, like Derry, Like, and in fairness to Derry, the one thing I will say, there was a new manager went in there at the start of the season. He would have looked at that, finishing second or 6 points behind now. He'll probably accept that, in the sense it's my first full year. Tomorrow or next year, we'll probably mount a serious challenge. Mm. The one I think you can take out of this, and it's often like a horse race that you probably know better than me, Hugh, but where a horse might finish well coming in fourth or third, and people say he ran on well, look forward
for the notebook.
So Shelburne are very much that. Since Joey O'Brien has come in, they've been outstanding.
Do you think with Damien Duff, did you expect him to fall off when Duff left?
I expected a drop off, but not fall off.
Okay.
A little bit of a drop off, but to be fair, they've gotten better. They've gotten better.
This was what I was going to ask you.
Yeah, they've gotten better. It's not a drop off or a fall off. They've actually improved.
Mm.
And as much as I love Damien and all the brilliant work that he did and winning the league and all that stuff, and you have Shelburne back, he got them back to that level. Joey has taken over the mantle and pushed it on another bit, and which speaks volumes for him as well. And it probably speaks volumes, Hugh, for the work he was doing with Damien. Everybody used to focus heavily on Damien
because he took all the attention.
And to be fair to Damien, he used to always say, no, Joey's behind me, pushing me all the way. You have the staff as well, are brilliant. So now we're actually seeing clear evidence of that.
So squad wise, do you think then that the closest potential rival to Shamrock Rovers will be Shelburne if they can develop?
100%, 100%. I think the only thing they're missing is a prolific centre forward.
Yeah.
Meepo's in and out. He's done quite well, but he's a bit hit and miss for me. Sean Boyd has been injured a lot.
Saw him a few times this season and missing a lot of chances.
Whereas the midfield, I think, is as strong as Shamrock Rovers. Yeah. You have McInroy's been a brilliant signing. JJ Lunny, Jack Henry Francis, who'd have just signed a couple of weeks ago. Harry Wood, Ali Coote. And I'll show you a clear example of where they have pushed on, Hugh. Damien never really played with what they call now is two tens. Everybody's labelled with a number. But the two attacking midfielders will be the likes of Ali Coote and Harry Wood. Damien would rarely kind of put them in the same team together, and people used to say he was a little bit conservative. First thing Joey O'Brien did, got the two of them in, and they've matched up like Shamrock Rovers. So they play two sitting midfielders and two attacking midfielders, like a box. And I think it's been brilliant because you've Harry Wood playing unbelievable stuff. Ali Coote is playing more regularly. You still have McInroy and JJ Lunny, and now you have Henry Francis. So even if you look at Hugh, the clear evidence is there. The last 10 games, they've 23 points out of 30. Shamrock Rovers have 17 points out of 30 the last 10 games. So they're the form team, Shelburne, and if they can carry this on into next year, I'd love to see them and Shamrock Rovers going toe to toe.
Shells play Pats tomorrow. If Pats win that match, they get the fourth spot, right? So, and obviously this is all, you know, providing that Shamrock Rovers beat Cork City in the cup. If Cork City win the cup, then all bets are off here. But it looks like Pats and Stephen Kenny are in the driving seat. Mason Mealy obviously is leaving. I was up at the Besiktas game.
I don't think they are in the driving seat, Hugh. Sorry.
You don't think?
No,
so?
No, not at
so
all.
Because Shells have nothing to play for, so they've a free shot here.
Oh, well, Shelburne will be pushing for second.
Yeah.
Because
Derry have to play, right.
And make a difference in terms of the Europa League and the Conference League as well for next year.
But they need Derry to do them a favour, though.
Well, Derry are playing Cork.
Yeah.
So
and Cork have one eye in the cup final, probably.
Yeah, so they'll need Cork to maybe take points off Derry. But I think Shelburne will be going gung-ho to finish second. So, and I've watched Pats a lot lately. I would fancy Shelburne. I don't think Pats will get the job done there.
Really?
Now, they went late in the season last year and beat them 3-2. It was a great game, actually, towards the end. But I just think this St. Patrick's Athletic team...
Too inconsistent.
Yeah, they are, to
too
be
inconsistent.
Fair.
Too reliant on Mason Mealy to score as well. And then Waterford, Sligo and Galway all on 38 points at the bottom as well. So, obviously, you know, massive for them trying to stay up. They have the playoff to come as well. So, look...
Drogheda are my tip.
Drogheda your tip?
Drogheda are playing Bohemians tomorrow. I think Shells will beat St. Pat's and I think Drogheda will beat Bohemians and get themselves
and
in.
And get them in, sir.
It would be unbelievable.
That'd be some turnout. Right, what's happening with Liverpool? And Arne Slot, let's have a quick listen to Arne Slot here, and we'll take a short clip of him talking today ahead of their match against Aston Villa tomorrow, and his desperation really to try and stop the rot.
What are the key factors do you think that are going to help you arrest this recent poor run of results, 6 defeats in 7 games, and what's the key to getting the best out of the players again? I know there have been elements of misfortune in that run, but there have been occasions, I know last week was the first time I think you say you're really disappointed in the performance.
Yeah, for 60 minutes, yes. 30 minutes was okay, but 60 minutes was... I think first half against Palace was also similar to that 60 minutes I was talking about. The thing that gives me the most confidence is the quality of the players we are having. So, and the amount of chances these players are still creating. So this will eventually always lead to these players scoring more goals than we've done till now. And we have to address certain other things. But yeah, if I talk about that, if I'm speaking about what we have to improve, people then tell me I'm using excuses. So maybe it's better now just to say we need to address certain things to do better. But there are a lot of positives to go into this week as well. Like I just said, quality of the players is the first and foremost. And the amount of chances we create from open play is still good enough to compete for the for the positions we want to compete for.
I tell you what, he's sounding more and more like Steve McLaren every day. Yes, Steve McLaren's here with the Dutch side. What's going on? Look, what's his best team? Do you think he knows?
No, absolutely he doesn't know his best team.
And also, look, myself and Alan were talking about this before we came on air. Like, does he just need time, Alan, to find the best formula with an awful lot of attacking talent and a bit of a leaky defence, but does he just need time to figure out who the best players are in a starting 11 and where to play them?
Yeah, that would be an okay statement to you if it was the fact that you finished fifth last year and you bring in reinforcements to try and go win a league. They won the league last year. What more time?
Soft league.
What more time do you need?
Yeah.
In terms of
but
the
it's, it's a lot of attacking players to bring in, though.
Think he's brought that on himself. So if you go from winning the league to completely dismantling it and changing the team and bringing in five or six new lads, that causes problems for himself and also for the players in the dressing room. So I think that was an unnecessary thing for him to do. Yes, strengthen from a position of power, absolutely. But bring in one or two. Why bring in five or six?
Yeah.
He already had a brilliant team. So the couple that left, if you, obviously maybe you're looking at, he already had Bradley, so I don't know why he wants to bring in Frimpong and you spend 40, 50 million on Kerkez when you already have Robertson. Now Robertson maybe wasn't at the races as much last year, but he was still okay.
I like Bradley though, he's a good player, isn't he?
Bradley's a good player.
Yeah.
But the in the forward areas is the problem, and that's where the one shining light that he's had, he's left him out. Ekitike, he's been absolutely brilliant in the games.
He's in my fantasy football team. You better pick him this weekend.
He's very well. He will play now because Isak is injured.
Yeah.
But I think he had an issue with the fact that they went all out to get Isak. Then when it was looking a bit like we're not sure if we'll get him, then they got Ekitike, and then they realised we have to kind of go all in on Isak now because that's where we started. And bringing in the two of them at that kind of money, who I don't know if that was in the plans.
And sure, like I know Kanate is a liability. Kanate is a liability for me. I'm not a fan of him. Like I'm always nervous. I don't think he's quick enough. He's got caught.
Well, you
so
know
many
who's letting him down? Van Dijk beside him.
Yeah.
Because he has looked shaky.
He has.
And at times shakier than
Kanate. But I would say, like, we know Van Dijk can do it. I think Van Dijk is trying to cover for Kanate too many times, and I don't think he has absolute confidence in his centre partner. That's my reading of it.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, yeah, I would have concerns in that area, but I think the problem, Hugh, is because he's made so many changes, there's concerns all over the pitch, and that's the problem for him. He came in last year, and what we used to say about him last year, Slot, he'd done an unbelievable job in the fact that he changed nothing because he had a ready-made team.
Yeah,
so that to me, that was good management because you'd have so many fellas coming in, lots of ego at play and saying, oh, I don't want Klopp's team. I'm going to do my team and I'm going to change this and I'm going to change. He actually saw the team and said, couple of little tweaks, put Gravenberch as the kind of deep lying one. And they were brilliant, as we all know. But the fact now, I don't know if it's ego at play again where he's going, all right, now I'm going to strengthen with my team. And he's making hames of
it. Put your stamp on it this season and your stamp turns out to be pretty crap.
Well, and there you go. So we've spoken there about maybe the forwards and the back four.
Yeah.
The midfield is such a major problem as well.
Huge.
Now, McAllister hasn't been as good, and I think he's a brilliant player. But the best player to have in midfield, he plays him a right full.
And what about Verts?
Szoboszlai.
Verts gets pushed off the ball very easy. When he's time and space in the ball, he looks great.
But sure,
he's not getting it.
The only place he'll get time and space in the ball if he plays the five side with us. You don't get time and space in the ball in the Premier League.
No, I mean, all the ingredients, but is he a bit soft?
But that's the thing; he can have too many ingredients. Yeah. You could go. I'm bringing you to a restaurant after
too
here,
many
and
chefs.
The chef is going to have too much in the kitchen.
Too many chefs.
No, I do think he's caused a problem for himself with two. And as you started off, I suppose the first question you asked, does he know his best 11? That's the biggest problem because there's so much to change. Then you're trying to keep fellas happy. You obviously have Salah as well, who is a bit of a problem now this year after getting the big contract.
And he's not happy.
And I think as well, Hugh, we have to kind of speak about the human side of things. They did lose, obviously, a really important part of the dressing.
And it had to take a huge emotional toll. Like,
yeah.
No matter what you say, they're not robots.
Exactly. You know what I mean? And we saw the scenes with Salah, to be fair to him. He's getting probably the brunt of the stick. He was crying after the Bournemouth game, really emotional.
I know.
So I think that's definitely kind
it's
of played
a factor.
Part. Yeah, but I think from Slot's point of view, too much change too soon.
What about the fact, I love Sean Dyche, by the way, and I'm absolutely delighted he's back in Nottingham Forest. He said if he'd been manager at Manchester United, he would have won a lot more games than Amorim.
And where did he say it?
Where did he say?
On the overlap. On the overlap again. It. He did say it. I watched it.
Everything's from the overlap. But he's just giving us.
He did say that. Yeah. And I kind of agreed with him.
Yeah.
Because I was sitting at home saying I would actually do that as well, Sean, not just you.
Amarin is looking for what would only be his second away win of the season.
Yeah, like the obvious question everybody's...
Do you think they're turning around? Do you think they're turning?
That's the obvious thing. Are they turning the corner? I think...
John Milan thinks they've turned the corner.
I think they're halfway around the corner. And until we see another maybe two, three wins, then they're fully around it, Hugh. But I can't judge it off just three games. There has to be a longer winning sequence, a longer pattern. It can't just
be three
games.
I will admire Amarin, but I hope to God to have. If he sticks, like despite all the flack that he's gotten so much stick, if he sticks to this system and this shape and it does pay off for him, I will have nothing but respect for him.
Well, I think he's not going to change, so he's going to die on his sword. So if it is going to pay off for him, he will have been successful because he's not changing. The big thing I think that has changed for him, Hugh, as well, is, and you can talk systems and managers and all, ultimately it comes down to players.
Yeah.
They've brought in Cunha and Mbeumo and the difference those two have made. Then you have Bruno dropping back, who's a, I know he can be a whinger and a moaner, but as a footballer, he's a brilliant, brilliant footballer.
There's no denying that.
Nobody can deny that.
No.
You have Ahmad, who's obviously playing more regularly on the right. He didn't play a lot last year because he was injured. And you have the goalkeeper. So all of a sudden, you have four additions that they didn't have last year who are massive additions.
Mm.
And that's been a big, big difference this year for them.
Just finally then, before we wrap it up, Ben Foden is playing his 200th Manchester City. Phil Foden. What did I say, Ben?
Rugby. Is that rugby?
Ben Foden. Yeah, it is rugby.
Yeah.
Jesus, Phil. Dale will be killing me again. Phil Foden is playing his 200th Manchester City game and he's only seven.
What a talent.
In fairness, that's some stretch.
That's amazing, yeah. But sure, how many times did you hear me going on about Foden? He's amazing, talent.
And you know, even
200 games.
Looking at the England setup now as well, and you look at the amount of attacking midfielder options they have, and the problem that seems to be with Jude Bellingham, for whatever reason, Tuchel says his face doesn't fit, so I don't know what's going on there.
Now, it will fit when it comes to the big
games. Do you reckon?
Yeah.
Do you reckon they make
Bellingham
room for him?
Brilliant player.
Yeah, but you know, but he's a bit of a head case, though.
Well, you know what he did last week, which is phenomenal, and this is the way he answered the likes of that stuff, because that can become a big thing, Hugh. You know what the English media are like, and all of a sudden they can kind of manufacture Tuchel doesn't like Bellingham, which they've been trying to do.
And apparently a few of the senior players are not big fans of Bellingham as well. I think he's a bit of a head case.
I think he's brilliant.
No, he's a brilliant player.
And last week, what did he do? The El Clasico pops up scores.
Yeah,
so that's... He'll be 100% he'll be in. And you can have Foden, you can have all Morgan Rogers, all these lads who are brilliant, brilliant players. Bellingham's a different level.
Give us your nap for the weekend. Is it Liverpool to beat Villa, get back on track?
No, Villa are the form team.
Last five. I know they beat City.
13 points out of 15.
Do you think they'll beat Liverpool?
Yeah.
Do you think United will be first?
You know what I think of Unai Emery, brilliant manager.
Yeah. Yeah. And United to beat first? Yes or
draw.
No? Draw. Right. Okay. You heard it here first. Quick break. We're back in a sec.
This is 2FM's Game On.
And you're very welcome back. Jason Sherlock has been confirmed as part of Mark Dowd's Roscommon football management team. So, yeah, that's not bad. I have one friend from Roscommon. Gary, if you're listening, you'll be very excited about this. But yeah, look, I mean, boost up the old management team. Jason Sherlock, not a bad addition. Knows experience.
Strange move, but in terms of experience, absolutely
experience.
Brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, we're sticking with Gaelic Games. Over the last number of weeks, Paralympic gold medal swimmer Ellen Keane has been doing some sit-down interviews here on Game On. An interesting one today, because Ellen, in her debut season, David Fitzgerald, who's been ever-present for all 13 seasons, will appear on the first episode of the new series of Ireland's Fittest Family, sponsored by Londis, this Sunday on RTE1. So Ellen sat down with David Fitzgerald and interviewed him about the show and the parallels and differences of managing families and hurling teams.
This is 2FM's Game On.
I love the show because we're dealing with families that are vulnerable. Like they're coming in, they're taking a chance.
Yeah.
You might have a mum that's not fit or a dad that's not fit, and they're doing it for their kids, or they're not sure how to talk, or am I fit enough for this? So they have question marks.
Yeah.
We're helping them. It's our job to help them be the best they can be. They're putting themselves out there. And when you see them doing something that they're not meant to do, or that the mum is absolutely out of her comfort zone, or the dad, they're out of their comfort zone and they've done it, I actually knocked the biggest kick out of seeing that and seeing the reaction of their sons and daughters. It's simple things like that, actually.
Yeah.
That's what rocks me
yeah.
more than anything.
Yeah.
Seeing people do stuff that they question whether they can do or can't do, you know? You can look at the show on TV and think, I know I can do that.
Yeah.
But then when you're put out there,
yeah.
and you got to do it, and it's not as easy, and you're questioning yourself. You've probably seen it this year a few times, the reaction of when they achieve something, and
yeah.
when they get through something. It's like, it has to make you feel good. Like,
yeah.
I love that. That's what I get a buzz out of. I love winning, but I love reaction of people more. I love people's reaction. You have to think back how you felt when you achieved what you achieved, that feeling inside you that I've done this.
Yeah.
I've done this. These people are feeling like they've put themselves outside their comfort zone, they've done something. I love watching that. And that's where I get my kicks from. That's what drives me on.
Is that what keeps bringing you back
yeah.
to coaching?
Yeah.
Is that like nearly a similarity that you see then between your hurlers and the families?
Most of the things I've done in GAA over the last 20, 30 years, a lot of teams I've managed and teams I've played in are teams that wouldn't have achieved.
Mm.
They mightn't have won for a long time or beaten teams for a long time. And when you actually do that, when you beat someone you haven't beaten for years, or when you win something you haven't won for years, that feeling is incredible. Like, if you ask me right now, like, hurling, I wanted to achieve as a player, win All Ireland, win X, Y, and Z. But if you ask me when I look back, well, what did it really mean, or what was it? Do you know what? I could pick two or three things, and it all comes down to different emotions of people.
Mm.
When we won the Munster final in 95, my dad came out, lifted me up. What he said to me, I'll never forget in my life, right? And he wouldn't be an emotional man. He wouldn't say stuff like what he said to me that day. That's a pick take from my hurling that I'll never forget. When my club won the All-Ireland club at my club, going down through Sixwell Bridge, seeing all the people I grew up with, seeing them around the village. I have medals at home. My mam has them. I don't know where they are. The medals are great.
Mm-hmm.
But the memories and what they did and how to connect the people is better, and to see the reactions. That's what makes me tick.
Do you think you've ever learnt anything from over the years being on the show that you've brought to your managerial position?
Yeah, what I learned to the families probably after a few years was that I needed to sit, like, I say if we had an obstacle course, I would have gone out and thought we could do it this way.
Yeah.
What I learned was to sit down, discuss it with the families and actually talk to them, try to understand how they're feeling about things so that it give me a better picture. So by being on Fit as Family, I think I learned better that I need to actually understand the individuals a small bit more to get more out of them.
Yeah.
Where when I was training teams earlier, GAA teams, I would have said, okay, I think we do it this way, we do this, this and this. But we're all different.
Yeah.
And I just need to understand the person a bit more. Have I perfected it? Definitely not. I still think I have a long way to go on that.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of excites me that I still know that I have stuff I can be better on. But we all want the end goal. It's how do we get to the end? With Ellen Keane, what makes her tick? Like, if I'm your coach, what are the things mm-hmm. that I can do to get the best out of you? Not, I think you should train this way, this way, this way. Yeah, training might come into it, but I also need to figure out your character, your temperament, what you're actually about as a person. Have I nailed that yet? No. But I'm certainly, Fitz family does help me get better.
They both help each other.
Oh, yeah. Isn't it? It's probably the same in life and that, and you do. You might think something. Someone else might think something different. But what I'd always think in my head is, okay, I need to get to here. I might need to bring them along with me. How am I going to achieve that?
Yeah.
Rather than go ahead and just say, we're doing this, because that probably won't work.
Do any of your players ever bring up anything from a show or slag you about anything that's happened during a show?
Ah, listen, sure, everyone always goes on about the shouting and roaring. You're always shouting and roaring, and you get the pee taken out of you because of that. Do they see the whole thing of what goes on all the time? No.
Yeah.
You know, and I know there's a lot more goes on where you're talking stuff off camera and that. Do I mind that people have a perception of me that it's all roar and go at it? No. I don't know if you might have been, there was one part this year, a particular event we were doing, and I was giving it socks. And then it came to this one thing that we were doing.
I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Do you? Mm-hmm. And I had to totally peel back, totally come back,
mm-hmm.
and not be just nice and calm and gentle, because it was not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
I actually enjoy something like that, because
there's a moment of learning for you.
You have to spot that situation and adapt to it. And that's kind of nice for us as coaches, that it's not all just go out and, yeah, let's go and let's do this. There's times in the middle of this that they need you to help them.
Mm.
And by roaring at them, it's not going to help them.
Yeah.
So if I was your coach, like, one of the first things I would be doing is trying to figure you, what works for you, what doesn't. Most important for me as a coach is, how do I get to achieve what we need to achieve? And it's not about me. It's about you.
Yeah.
How I get the best out of you. And I learned that. Am I perfect at it all the time? Definitely not. what I try and do, right, so if we're going through a course, like be that Carriganet or whatever, the first day that we crawled under that, like I try and learn, is there anything, if we're coming to a wall, is there any bit of that that sticks out more than, is there something? Mm. So you're always looking for something that I can go back to my team and give them one or two little nuggets and they'll say, fuck, like he's on the ball, like, or this, that and the other thing. And then I'll more than likely ask them, okay, do you want me to go after you? Would you prefer I don't go after you? And 90% of them want you to stay on them. You'll have a few say, I'd prefer if you didn't, if I'm under. And then you just say, okay, accept it. But that excites me, that stuff.
Yeah, but does that work with a big team? Do you know, like, do you have enough, is there enough of Davy to give to every single person on that team to get to know every single personality and how everything ticks? Or do you kind of do what you do with Ireland's Fittest Family, where you find the leaders of the group and you kind of learn from them and what they think of everyone else?
I think it's a bit of both.
Yeah.
I think it's a bit of both. You always nearly get a few people that you know. Like, so if you have a group of 36, no hope you can keep 36 happy. It just won't happen. Yeah. And even at the end of the year, I can tell you that most of that 36 will have different opinions of you. Mm-hmm. Because when you're a player or you're an athlete, you'll see certain things the way you want to see that suits you. Mm-hmm. My job is to make sure that it suits the team environment. And I have to keep that in mind. One, don't be worried that everyone doesn't like you, because it's a good chance it won't. But if you can get a few people that you know are really solid and good, and you can keep them getting your message across to other people, great. But then you also have to be aware, if someone might be off in a team, they mightn't be performing. What I like to do is say to my backroom team, if you spot anything in their behaviour, say someone comes in, someone like, how's things, and how are you getting on, how's the farm, and they say, oh yeah, all right, it's grand. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if someone's down a small bit, something might be wrong at work, something might be wrong at home, you'll probably get it after two or three nights. And it's to try and be aware, if something is going on in hurling or outside of hurling, can I help? I'd like to think I'm aware of that as much as possible and be as good as I can, because you know, as an athlete, if things aren't right in your life, it's going to affect you competing. You try and watch out for that. Can you get to everyone? No. But can you try and understand them? You can. There's some people I know, if I really go at them, I'll get more of them. There's some of them that will not work. That will not work.
Do you think for you it's nearly kind of taking ownership of your own ego and like accepting and allowing people not to like you and maybe having to rely on your staff around you to do the kind of heavy lifting that you want to, but you're obviously not getting through to someone?
It's a really good question. And I came across this recently where we're talking about egos. I think a lot of people, whether they realize it or not, including me, would have a bit of ego no matter what the story is.
Yeah.
Is it necessarily a bad thing? No, it's not. Is it helpful all the time? Definitely not. Have you got to realize at times that sometimes you're not right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think there is, in all of us, a small bit there for definite.
I think you need it.
Yeah, I do. And there is times that we all need to get a little kick in the pants. That is facts, me included.
Yeah.
There is times you need that, you won't always be right you think you are, but I think that goes to players, that goes to athletes, that goes to all of us at times, that we do need that.
Yeah.
But if you probably haven't got that, you probably doubt yourself a lot, which means you'll probably find it harder to achieve if you doubt a lot. You need to be confident, you need to be all these different things.
Yeah.
Having too much of it at times, that's something you got to be careful of.
Yeah, that's like seeing red.
Yeah, like that is something that can cause you trouble, like, you know, you, when you think you know it all and you've all the answers. And sometimes, has there been times in my life probably where I've done this or I've done that. But you know what, sport hasn't had an off way of kicking you in the pants and putting you back down to earth fairly quickly.
Is it hard to apologise then when you do see red and your ego does kind of take over?
I think I'm the person probably straight away, right there and then, I probably find it hard to admit it. But I think it does sink in, and I think maybe after X amount of minutes or a small bit of time, maybe do have a pint, maybe I do need to look at myself as well.
Yeah.
And I would definitely think I'm like that I mightn't see it straight out, and then I might actually realise, that's a pint.
It's kind of nearly like you feel like you owe it to yourself to see the other side, to really get two sides of the story, so that...
I think there is two sides. I always believe there is. Just my side is right. No. You know, at times, I believe a lot in what I do in different processes, and you'll be convinced of it.
Yeah.
And then you might hear something, you say, no, not right. But then again, you might think about it again and say, maybe. And I think that's a very important thing, that you might have to throw things around your head, two or three things, and not dismiss it.
Yeah.
I think I've got better at that. I don't think I'm perfect at it yet, but I think I've got better at it, listening to different things. I used to have a guy I used to ring after games, right? His first name was Liam, right? Good businessman, into sport a good bit. He's come into a lot of my dressing rooms when I do talks. He'd be around me, media stuff. He'd be around me all the time. I used to dread the calls with him later on that night, because what would Liam tell me?
The truth.
The truth. Good or bad. The end of the year when we'd have to review stuff. Liam was... Do you know the one thing I knew, though?
Mm.
He was for my good, but he was telling me the hard stuff. And he had to. Like, what? Did he pull me up a bit, a good bit? Yeah. I couldn't see it, like, and then... Yeah, okay. And it's nice to have, it's actually nice to have someone like that, that you know probably has your best interest at heart, and I'll tell you, that's the story. And I'll never forget him for that. I'm only bullying that he can't do it with me any longer, you know?
You need another person to keep you accountable.
Do you know what? I think we all kind of do.
100%.
I think it's nice to have that person, Ellen, that will, you know, say, and you might need to look at that, or he said, no. And then when you really think about it, it's like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, I think we do, you know. Yeah. And I'd love to say everything I think is right. It ain't, for definite.
But that's why you're still doing what you're doing, because you're learning so much as you're doing it.
The day we stop learning, I think, is the day we're in trouble, isn't it?
Yeah. But it's also the day you have to move on from what you're doing.
No,
it's like, you feel like you...
Training teams or how you deal with people. Do you know what? Even what you did, I'm sure, when you were... starting out being that swimmer you were, even as you progress through time, I'm sure things changed with you all the time, even habits you had. Like, what are we love habits, the things that work for us to do them, but there is times where you have to actually, I need to change.
Yeah.
A, B and C, you know.
Fun question.
Good.
If you had to create a family for Ireland's Fittest Family based off just the players that you've worked with over the years, who would you want in your family and why?
Oh my God. Oh my.
You're going to get some angry messages. Why did you leave me out of the family?
Okay. I could probably pick four. So I haven't worked with Camogie teams enough, but I'd probably pick one. But if you ask me four lads straight now, why, right? Owen Kelly Tipperary, the most incredible talent under the sun, but... he'd go through you. He would do whatever he had to do to win. Joe Canning in Galway, again, talented, super nice, was also very smart at bringing players around him to do what needed to be done, could understand the team dynamic and stuff like that. Brilliant. Tony Kelly from Clare, himself a Brendan Bugler. Tony or Brendan lived, breathed, slept, hurling. So that it, again, team-wise, very good. Last one for me then would probably be a fella called Fraggy Murphy from Cork. One of the best captains I ever came across. Talented, without a shadow of a doubt. I can remember I called training one morning for, I think it was 5 in the morning, and I wanted to see what way they'd be. I arrived in 4:15, 4:30 or something. He had the team training already, just to show me, whatever you want to do for us, we're ready, we're good. That type of character dynamic I absolutely loved. So I did. So that's just off the top of my head, the few guys and why I would pick them. What are the characteristics? Fight, the attitude they have to bring around other people with them, that they can think of everyone else as well as themselves, is there. Smart. There are all the things that we would need for that there. And they're accountable to themselves as well.
Well, Davy Fitz. Season 13 of Ireland's Fittest Family.
Here we go, Ellen. Here we go.
This Sunday,
yeah.
November 2nd. Thank you so much for chatting with me.
Lovely.
Can't wait to beat you on the screen.
let's go at it, girl. Let's go.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Yeah, it was Davey Fitz talking to Ellen Keane there. My dream team, by the way, for Ireland's fittest family is Mike Tyson in the last 2 years of his career, Butterbean, the boxer, Moss Keane and Andre the Giant. Those lads that get around that course in 17 days, 465 hours. Out of breath. Come here to me. What about boxes for GA coaches, managers? Davey Fitz wants to be removed from the sideline to help himself so he doesn't go boxing the referee and put into a, like they have in rugby, so basically put into a coach's box, manager's box. Are you for it or against it?
I'd be against that.
Why?
I just think rugby is a more technical game, so it's needed for that, whereas the GA is all heart and passion, and he spoke about it there himself about fight and desire, and you need your manager on the line, I think.
Yeah, Dave's that's probably just sick of getting fined for
I think whatever friction's caused is probably a lot down to the managers themselves, maybe.
Yeah.
But just in terms of,
I like the fact that they're like in close quarters.
That.
You know, a bit
adds to it. Absolutely.
Stare you down. See what you're made
absolutely
of.
Absolutely adds to it.
See the whites of your eyes. Right. Speaking of, we got Jay Mangan after the break.
Game on. Racing.
You're very welcome back. Now, Jay Mangan is on the line to discuss the weekend's action. And Jane, you're very welcome. First of all, how are you?
I'm very well, Hugh. A small matter this weekend of Breeders' Cup and Grade 1 chases. Yeah. And it's great to be back. Isn't it
great to be back? And you know what? Down Royal for me, Jane, is always the kickstart of the National Hunt season proper. So the Down Royal, we've got the Champion Chase tomorrow. But this for me is when the National Hunt season kicks in. And I'm really excited. I'm ready for it now.
Yeah, and Gordon Elliott, of course, as he typically does, has started that meeting in really strong fashion. Four winners there today, albeit it could have been five if he didn't have the mishap in the first. And he's very, very strong-handed in the feature race there tomorrow.
Yeah, he is. Okay, let's talk about the Champion Chase, if you don't mind then. So, Envoilen, he likes this race, Jenny. I think he's hoping for to win it for a third time. He's 9 grade ones now, but he is 11 years of age. Is that a negative for you, and how do you see this race? Of course, your dad's horse, Splans Tower, as well, is going to be right up there, but how do you see this one going?
Yeah, I think you're right in that. Envoy Allen, while his age is a factor, you must remember he's run 6 times at Down Royal. He's won 5 of those 6, and the only time he hasn't won is when he was second in this race to Jerry Colomb. He's won this twice. He's, as you said, chasing a hat-trick, and while he's probably not the force that he was, he does run well fresh, and the yard had a double today, Henry de Bromhead's yard. So he's going to be in peak condition. He's currently favoured ahead of my dad's horse, Splans Tower. Obviously, we had a frustrating season last year. He's a hugely talented horse. We saw that what he did in the John Durkin and his seasonal reappearance last season. We know he's capable of winning a race of this standard. It's just a question mark about whether he's ready or not on his first run, and there's a bit of rain forecast as well, which is probably would help his chance.
Yes. Yeah, so how has his summer, Jane? I mean, look, obviously we last seen in the Punchestown Gold Cup, he finished second there, and a bit disappointing, I know, for your dad and for everybody, you included probably, in the King George. But how is he, do you think, coming into this race?
I can't really comment too accurately because I'm not at home, but my mum and dad are happy enough to send him there, which would give me confidence. I think last year he would have had an extra month going to the John Durkin, so he'd have had more time. But I think it's important with these big horses to get them started for the season so you can make plans and make targets for Christmas and beyond. So I think they really want to run him and basically test the water, really.
Okay, and look, it's not a two-horse race by any stretch. We've found a 50 in there, Western Fold, Stellar Story, and No Means Affordable Fury as well. But, like, is it between the top two in the market? There's very little to separate Spillane's Terror and Envoy Ellen in the betting, Jane. Is that how you see it, as a kind of a shootout between those two?
No, interestingly, the Found a 50 is actually the highest rated horse in the race. I don't really agree with that rating, but that's the handicapper's opinion. And he was a grade one winner at Aintree last year. He's probably a nearly horse. I don't know what his optimum distance actually is. Of course, he was second in the Arkle as a novice, but he's a very high class horse. And if Gordon's, you know, the yard obviously excel at this this meeting, Jack's chosen him over Western Fold and Stellar Story. So, yeah, he'd definitely be a major player for me.
There's a couple of nice hurdle races earlier on the card, Jane. I remember watching Romeo Coolio hack in this time last year and being really impressed by him. And those kind of hurdle races tend to throw up maybe one or two good ones to follow in terms of novice hurdles for the season here. I did see a Dream to Share is down to race as well tomorrow. I don't know what you make of his prospects trying to jump a hurdle, but it's been obviously a long road to try and get him to have some sort of career over hurdles. But anything to watch out for?
Yeah, I dream to share. It's going to be his third run over hurdles, so he'll actually qualify for a mark after this. And I think I'd keep that in my mind if you're going to support him. I think Road Exile is very unexposed and really interesting. This is in the second division of the Maiden Hurdle. The first division of the Maiden Hurdle is at half 12. Gordon has Calypso's Chance in there, who was actually one of my fancies for the Cheltenham Bumper last year. He came up short in that, but I think he's very highly regarded, and Gordon mentioned him today as one of the horses he was excited to get started. And he has a filly in the first race, three-year-old hurdle, called Mange 2, who won by 15 lengths on her only start in France. She, I think, comes in here with a big, lofty reputation.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, look, so it was a cracking day. It's a brilliant crowd as well. If you're anywhere around the area, or if you fancy a day's racing, weather permitting, it's a fantastic meeting. So I would advise anyone with an interest to try and get yourself to Down Royal tomorrow. Breeders' Cup tonight, Jane. And obviously, Aidan O'Brien is chasing this record, 29 Group 1 winners here. He's a couple of chances tonight. Dunica, I know, is going to oppose him in the Juvenile Turf Sprint as well. But look, what are you looking forward to tonight and over the next couple of days?
Yeah, the first race tonight is at 10, quarter to 10. True Love will take a lot of beating there, despite getting a relatively poor draw. Dunica has Havana Anna in there. She's currently second favourite. She has a chance, and I don't really fancy Brussels, his other runner in there, Aidan's other runner. That's the mount of Christophe Soumillon. But remember, Christophe just couldn't do the weight on True Love, hence the rider bookings. Don't be misled by first string or second string. I think Wayne Lorden is riding True Love because Christophe couldn't do the weight on her.
Okay.
The big news today was that Precise is out of the Juvenile Fillies Turf.
Oh, she's gone.
That's most disappointing. Yeah. She was highly touted and really... he was waxing lyrical about her, but she's actually a non-runner now. But Joseph O'Brien has a chance in that with the newly, freshly crowned Irish champion flat jockey, Dylan Brown McMonagall, riding, only 22 years of age. What a talent he is. So Queen of Hawaii in the 11:05 tonight. And obviously tomorrow, I think, you know, all the eyes in America will be on the classic. The eyes in Europe will be on the turf. We're looking at the, I think, you can tell me if I'm wrong, it's a shootout between Minnie Hawk and Rebel's Romance, surely.
It looks like it, you know, and obviously, I mean, I'd love Minnie Hawk to win it. And I think arrived in good order. Aidan O'Brien seemed pretty happy. And all systems go. But I don't know. I've no strong opinion, to be honest. In the Breeders' Cup, it's so... like, I've been burned over the years by having really strong fancies going into the race from an Irish context. And obviously, horses not handling the ground, not handling whatever. So I'm not sure how this goes. But have you a strong view in either?
Well, if Minnie Hawk is good enough to run them to the line and the arc, I think this is her race to lose. I am frustrated by Del Mar every time I watch it because it's not a good racetrack and the home straight's so short. So the draw can be very important. I think Charlie Appleby is a major chance in the Breeders' Cup Mile. Colin Keane will be hoping to run well with John Quill in that. And earlier on the card, of course, Aidan has Stad. You mentioned his chase of a title of the passing the 28 Group 1 winners. He's going to need three winners to do that. And now with Precise being out, that's beginning to look like a big ask.
Yeah, a little bit more difficult, absolutely, in her absence. You mentioned Dylan Brown and McGonagall, obviously, the championship this year. I don't know if you saw the 5-minute video, Jane, that was... I saw it on Darren Frehel's LinkedIn, actually. He had it up, if anyone is connected with Darren, he put it up. I'll try and put it out later on myself. But basically a 5-minute video of when Dylan was, like, I think he was only 11 or 12.
12. I actually retweeted it.
Amazing.
Myself. So
wasn't
if anybody
great?
Is looking for it, it's on my Twitter.
Brilliant.
I honestly, I'd say a video has never aged as well in 10 years.
That's absolutely brilliant. It goes through his boxing training. He was a really talented boxer as well when he was younger. His family, the support, he acknowledged this week about how much his parents and his sister have played a role in his success. But I just thought, you know, looking back on what he's done this season from the eyes of a 12-year-old was absolutely brilliant.
It's no mistake that he's champion.
No.
You know, he's been working on this since he was literally able to ride. This is what his aspirations have been. But aside from dedication and talent, he's got a great mentality. He loves what he does. He doesn't take it for granted. And you can put him anywhere around the world. I don't think it's not that... It's a good few years ago now, he and Frankie Dettori had a bit of a barraging match on
the
course.
And I was praying Dettori would actually go through with it, because knowing that Dylan Brown McMahon was a championship boxer, I thought he'd take his head off, but it didn't happen.
Yeah, but Dylan held his ground on the track and Frankie didn't like that. And now in the week where Frankie Dettori is going to retire from race riding, wouldn't it be apt if Dylan Brown McMonagall were to ride his first Breeders' Cup winner.
On that beautiful note, we shall leave it. Jane, enjoy the racing down Royal in the Breeders' Cup this weekend. Thanks so much for your time. Thank you for your company over the last hour or so. I hope you enjoy the weekend. The All Blacks, the Premier League, racing, it's all happening this weekend. Until Monday, we'll see you then.
This is 2FM.